Hello again. This is part two of episode 78, our special giant size TV episode. And in this part, we talk to some great detail about the first season of True Detective. So it got a little long. The night went long. There wasn't a lot that I really wanted to cut. I thought all the discussion was pretty good. So enjoy the extra long episode. Thanks for downloading. Bye. Let's go ahead and we'll give everyone, because we're going to be eventually talking about True Detective, and we'll review that in a real way. This is going to be a giant size episode, but let's let everybody kind of rattle off some stuff they're watching and interested to talk about. So, Richard, we'll start with you. What are some stuff that that you're watching that you want to talk about briefly?
I thought American Horror Story is mentionable because it goes season by season.
The anthology season.
I really like that quality to it. And the fact that they do live up to the name. They didn't just throw an American to kind of like give it a medium Americana kind of feel. Like, it really does do this weird thing about human culture, but they also do this really weird, like, B horror. Like, they don't even go. They don't even go for A horror. They go like for really, really schmaltzy B horror and mix it in with those kind of actually very interesting themes. And again, it's a show that they're not trying to be like. They're not trying to do the Rainbow Coalition. They're not trying to. You know, they talk about real like race issues, female issues in society. The first season really talks about the family, and so it doesn't do as much of that. The second season is set, and then the second season is completely different than that. So it just gives it a really fun flavor. And it gives it room to, because it has that B-horror kind of quality to it, it has this really, it can be subversive and kind of talk to you about things without talking to you about things.
Yeah. Is it pretty scary?
It can get, well, I like two reasons. It can be kind of like, for me, it's hard to say if it can be scary. I think so from my wife's reactions. However, I can say that another thing I've always liked about the horror genre is when it gets really weird. Weird as shit, and you're kind of almost like, it puts you in a different state of mind because you're like, whoa. This show does that quite often, actually, and I like that. It's kind of like, it definitely goes for that Twin Peaks kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it hides it, again, it hides it under this B-horror line, which I'm into, so.
Yeah. And I didn't mention it at the top of the show, but I honestly think that we are still feeling the ripple effect from Twin Peaks, from 1990. Yeah. You know, that show was one of the first shows that really, like, everyone had to, like, after the pilot was like, oh shit, are you watching this show? And unfortunately, by the middle of the second season, everyone was like, I don't know what the fuck's going on anymore. So it almost was ahead of its time that way too. And like Lost and Heroes and.
Well, there you go.
What anything else that you want to mention real quickly?
Well, we've all seen a smidgen of it, but It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I absolutely love the show. It's to me the comedy is apex.
That wasn't a judgment.
Whatever. No, my next one I'll mention, you'll definitely judge me for.
Okay.
No, it's always incentive. They tackle some pretty hard issues, and it's really a very cynical show, and I like it for those reasons. Also, you get to see Charlie Day.
Yeah, who's so far been the breakout of that show, and for good reason. He's really funny. He's one of those guys that were kind of like Adam Driver. It's just his line delivery. He could be reading the phone book, and it's going to be funny and interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. These ones I'm going to pass through really quick.
Sure.
Sons of Anarchy. It's one of my favorite shows, and it's Hamlet on motorbikes. It's really good. New Girl. I'm getting a kick out of it, and for me, it has a similar quality to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, in that the characters, like, you love the characters so much. It does have lots of peaks and valleys, but I've enjoyed New Girl quite a bit. And then my guilty pleasure that people give me shit for, but I love, Skins.
The original Skins, British one.
The original British one is well written. It's super well written. And it's Mad Men about British teenagers. That's what it's about.
Is this the one you thought I was going to judge you for?
Is some of the best writing I've seen in television. Oh, I know you're judging me. Both of you are.
It's just funny because it's you.
Here's the thing. it really is. I have no opinion of Skins. I honestly don't even really know what it's about. I was expecting you to bring up Walking Dead, because I know, you know, we've kind of had a couple debates about Walking Dead, and so Skins, that threw me. And I was like, Walking Dead, that's not like a cult indie thing that people don't know about.
I don't think it's a cult indie thing, Skins. I think there are, but people, like, I say it and people look at me like I'm like a crazy person. I'm like, no, Skins, we're, motherfucker.
We're really, Skins. Okay. What about you, Keith? What are you watching that we haven't talked about?
Oh my god, so much. I wanted, because I knew we were going to talk more about, like, hour-long dramas.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I kind of dip into a lot of those. But I'm a comedian. I do the improv comedy. God, was that Borat? Did I fucking slip into Borat while saying I represent comedy? God,
it's okay. It happens to the worst of us.
So I've been, I don't know, I've always enjoyed, like, the half hour comedy shows, and there's so much good comedy right now on TV. There's Portlandia, mm-hmm. Which is a sketch show that, it reminds me a lot of, it very much feels like, what's the guy's name from SNL?
Lorne Michaels?
Yeah, Lorne Michaels. It very much feels like, kind of reminds me of an updated Kids in the Hall kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just really like the world they create.
Or the Upright Citizen Brigade television show. It reminds me of that a lot sometimes.
Yeah, the way
the non-sequiturs and
the way the characters sort of come in cycles.
Yeah.
They're reoccurring. I know Kroll Show's really good. I haven't watched a lot of that. There's so many to mention. Parks and Rec, Community, I've had a slow slide into. It's very much like Girls for me. The first season, I did not get what people were raving about. I was like, it's okay. You know, it's like Scrubs light. And then the second season, I was like, okay, there were a few episodes that I was like, okay, that's good. And then the third season, I lost my mind. Like, to me, it was Simpsons at its prime writing, and I just was tickled by it. Fourth season, you know, there was a controversy with Dan Harmon getting kicked off, but now he's back! And even though they've lost a few of the main characters, the writing has been some of the funniest. Like, the last couple episodes have just... They've had me peeing.
Peeing?
They've made me laugh in ways that half-hour sitcoms does not normally make.
See, the last episode... I dip in and out of the show. I usually walk in while people are watching it, when you started it. And then I have these friends here who are community heads. And they tried to, like, it was after the Oscars, they're like, you're going to watch an episode because you're going to love it. And then they showed me this one that was like a parody of Seven or like Zodiac.
The coin.
The ass crack coin thing. And I was like, yeah, it's okay. I mean, I don't know. I've never fallen in love with the show. Maybe I need to give it more of a Community college
it was a slow
try,
burn.
But
oh snap.
End of show. Drop the mic.
Drop the mic.
It's okay. I've only seen the first two seasons, and for me, it's just kind of hit and miss. The ones that I've liked are the well-directed episodes. Yeah. There was a paintball one that I was really into. I remember that.
Everybody loves the paintball.
And I think that there was one where Ahmed is dressed up as Batman.
Yeah,
and I do like him in Troy's relationship.
Yeah, and that is one place where the show's struggling now is Donald Glover left, and so Abed sort of feels out of place. He doesn't have that sort of play, and so they really need to find a place for his character to fit in now, because he was actually a character I always sort of struggled with.
So what if he killed himself because his best friend left? Would that...
No, that'd be really sad. Half-hour comedy.
Yeah, see, this is why I can't do half-hour comedies normally. I do them with my wife because she likes them a lot. But that's how I'm always. I'm like, what if this character died? And I just
and it's always Sunny in Philadelphia. That could happen.
They might be back the next episode though with some bizarre reasonings.
That actually makes me want to bring up a show I want to touch on. It's something I know both of you have watched a little bit. Actually, quite a bit. Is How I Met Your Mother is wrapping up. I have been with How I Met Your Mother since the third season. And I caught up pretty quickly. So it feels like I've been with that show from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, part of that is why I kept watching. I think there were some definite low seasons. In the middle, it was starting to... it was like the writing changed or something. It's starting to feel very grating, very artificial. And something that I thought was very appealing about the start of the show was how real the characters felt for a single-camera sitcom. Because aside from Family Matters, I typically hate that format. It is coming to a close, and it's been kind of an emotional journey for me. Even at its worst, it's never afraid to pull at the audience's heartstrings. Good or bad, whether you like the show or not, it has affected me in a way that, you know, like Friends did for that generation, or Seinfeld. It's very strange. I've never had a relationship with a show like this.
Well, I think, How I Met Your Mother, The Big Bang Theory, and a few of these other ones are kind of the death rattle of the three camera sitcom with the laugh track.
Yeah.
And
we don't have time on this podcast for me to talk about my story with, The Big Bang Theory.
No, yeah. I'm just saying, these shows are big, but after they end, I don't know if there's ever gonna, if that tradition is really going to have much of a future.
Well, it's sort of bizarre because there have been a couple shows like Up All Night, mm-hmm. Where it started out as a non-traditional sitcom, and I don't totally know what happened with it. They lost some writers, and then they were trying to save it. It was very strange. And they're like, well, let's just totally redo it as the single set sitcom, which totally changed the show, like completely.
Yeah.
So much so that the stars were like, no, this is awful. Like, why would you do this? So it's sort of strange how the studio system wants that to work so
the bad. Networks, yeah.
Because it's cheap. Yeah. But I agree. I think it's had its day. There's never going to be another Family Matters, and they need to let it go. I'm going to be sad when How I Met Your Mother's over. But
well, you have How I Met Your Father or Dad to look forward to. I love Greta Gerwig and basically everything, so I'll give it a shot, but it's not a show I need in my life.
How I Met Your Mother, it was one of my wife's shows, and so we watched it pretty religiously. This is what happened. I thought it was pretty unique and pretty fun and pretty good for what, like you said, for a one-camera kind of sitcom kind of thing. or a three camera laugh track, whatever
kind of sitcom
this is. And what happened to me is around season five, I think. This is what the this is what happened to it. The first half of the season was super schmaltzy and silly, and I could pretty much throw away that part of the season. And then the last half was everything that was relevant and what I liked about How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
And I feel like it continued like that, except I felt like, depending on the season, but for me, I think it was season seven or eight, I thought they started getting really bad. Like, the jokes became so schmaltzy and people didn't even give a shit that they're just like, oh, we're wacky. Barney's going to say something now.
Yeah. No, I agree. There was definitely this time period where the show went that way, and
I feel like I feel like this last season we flat out stopped watching it, and we've watched it almost since the second season.
It got to the point where it's like, okay, this show needs to wrap it up. They are just done with ideas, and then you know, I was like, oh man, the ninth season, I don't even know. You know, I was kind of at that same place, like, how much longer can I really give a shit? And then I have been pleasantly surprised by the ninth season. There's been a little of that schmaltz popping back up. But for the most part, it is the writers focused on writing a show that you know they love.
See, I think that's me. And I think we might disagree just because, so far, like I said, we got to the halfway point in the show.
Have you been watching this season?
Yeah, I'm talking about this season. I thought that I thought from season, I think we've watched episodes one through like eight or nine or something like that. I don't know. I can't. We watched quite a bit of the first part, and I've thought it was terrible.
I think the first half was a little bloated, but I don't know. I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah,
I'm definitely ready to see it go, but. Yeah, I don't know. It'll always have a place in my heart.
Well, we're going to finish it because it's, you know, again, we have been with it for that long. But I don't know. I do feel like the comedy aspect of the writing has gotten really lazy. The character's journey in general has still been interesting to me, all of the characters. But the actual comedy of the show has really failed.
I don't think it's funny the way I used to. I will agree with that. Usually when they go for the laughs, you know, sometimes I'll even roll my eyes. I mean, I'll go there. It's not as funny as it used to be. I don't know that's, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I used to follow it big time. I was really into the first four seasons. I'd rewatch them even, and I don't usually do that with sitcoms. Because when you watch with a new person, it's kind of like watching it again for the first time. And then I started season five, three or four episodes in. I was kind of like, it had been a kind of a long break since I had watched it, and I was just like, I just don't know if I'm into this anymore. I think I'm kind of done. And that was, you know, well before a lot of people jumped off, so. But I'll probably at least watch the last season or something just to kind of get closure, but I'll wait. Okay, well, here on my little short list of things I'm watching that none of you all are watching, I dipped into Bates Motel randomly one night. I think I was probably procrastinating school and just wanted to look for a reason not to do school. So
I really hope your professors listen to this podcast.
Every episode, I'm sure. Yeah. and so I just was like, well, it looks terrible and dumb, but I'll just watch the pilot to see if it's interesting. And it's not good, really. Like, if you think about what's actually happening in the story, it's really silly and really pulpy, but it's so entertaining. And I think Freddie Highmore, you know, it's based on Psycho loosely, but I think Freddie Highmore as Norman Bates and Vera Farmiga as Norma Bates, they are so good. They're such great actors that they just elevate the material. And so when it slips into like quasi not quite Twin Peaks, or when it slips into not quite Breaking Bad, or it slips into just pure ridiculousness or almost Degrassi, it's, I don't know, you can just get through it because they're so good and they're so screen grabbing to watch. And there's something that's just kind of, I don't know, pulp magazine pervy about it that's kind of just interesting and sort of ballsy. And
it's the grossest adjective I've ever fucking
heard. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I don't know. It's an interesting show. It's a big hot mess, but it's kind of fun to watch. And I'm vaguely excited to start watching the next season.
Well, a show talking about that, there's a show called Hemlock Grove on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's really fucking terrible.
I don't... It's like everything I said, but bad.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I haven't watched it. Don't.
Yeah, it's Eli Roth.
Oh, well, that's all you had to say.
No, I watched the whole thing, but this is a weird experience, though, for me. So TV, if it's bad, I'll give it up. Yeah. Hemlock Grove, I watched it all the way through, almost because I wanted to see how bad it could get. And I've never had that experience in TV.
Yeah.
I did. But I didn't hate it. It was more like out of a place of amusement. It was almost like, how much can I torture myself?
Yeah.
Yeah, like morbid curiosity. And
Yeah. The other show I'm watching, another HBO show, just premiered this year and just had its last episode last night, Sunday night, of the first season, is Looking, which is Andrew Haig's TV series. He did the British queer film called Weekend, which was kind of like the gay version of Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise. And it's a really kind of, I don't know, if you watch the movie, it's not the type of thing you think, give this guy a show, because it's really impressionistic and kind of observational, and the characters are, you know, kind of really withheld and not saying very much to each other. And the show very much represents that. It is kind of in the same sort of tradition as far as like a group of people. You know, it's about three gay guys who are living in San Francisco, modern day San Francisco. And the lead character is played by Jonathan Groff, who was originally on Glee. And now he's playing a very different kind of character. He's a game designer. And it's just about them sort of, you know, quote unquote, looking for different things in their life. He's trying to sort of manage a relationship. He's trying to prove himself that he can have an adult relationship now that he's getting into his late 20s. One of the other main characters is entering his 40s, and he's trying to get his career off the ground. He's trying to become a restaurant owner, and not doing very well at it. And all of these, like, kind of like girls, all of these guys are very flawed. They're very self-centered, and they don't really quite realize that. But it's, unlike Girls, it's not arch at all. It's extremely interior. It's extremely casual. Everything about the show is very casual, almost in that sort of Mad Men-ish way, except we're not as stylized. And it's interesting how the show is really kind of like split viewers. I mean, even within the gay community, there's a lot of people just like, I just don't really care about these guys. I don't really care about the show. But I kind of understand the sort of indie film vibe that it's going for. And it's a slow burn. Like, you know.
So this is one of the film refugee kind of shows.
It's experimenting. It's trying something new with half-hour television. And if I had one complaint about it, is I think for as observational and as interior as all these characters are, it almost needs to be an hour-long drama to really get much out of each episode, because it kind of feels like not a lot happens per episode. But the show has had an accumulative effect on me. I think by the last episode, seeing it almost kind of feels like just one movie. It's Jonathan Groff is really, charismatic's not the right word really to use for any of these characters, but he's interesting. He makes mistakes that I recognize. And, you know, it's gay representation in a way that, you know, not like Queer as Folk, where it's them, you know, giving each other blowjobs and snorting coke in a bathroom. It's much more realistic and suburban. And I don't know. I'm glad the show got picked up again. I'm interested to see how it develops.
So it's like Entourage for straight people.
it took me a little bit.
But yeah, I had to really think about that one, but it was good.
All right.
Real quick, before we go into the main topic, because I feel like that's where you're going.
Yeah, that is next on the
back. I did want to just give out a shout out to Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I've been really enjoying that show. And Richard and I didn't get to talk about Sherlock.
Uh-huh.
I think a big part of why is because it feels more like movies.
Oh, it is.
Feature length.
Yeah.
Than a television show. So not that we don't feel love for Sherlock.
We also didn't talk just... Louis.
Mm-hmm.
That, oh, God. Oh.
I know. Well, I think me and Rich are going to try
and
do
this. I feel like everybody's talked Louis, though. I mean, Louis's so good, everybody talks about it.
I feel like me and Richard, we're going to try and do this at least twice a year. So that we can have a moment to catch up with things, discover new things. And when
some
we do
of the
this...
Things we've, some of the things that we've had to glaze over, we can kind of maybe go back to some of those.
Or see how they've developed or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, if we miss things now, we can bring them up later. And maybe we'll bring you back on.
Maybe I convince you guys to watch Skins.
Maybe.
I'd also like to give a shout out. A show that I don't think a lot of people have been watching, and I don't know why, is Derek on Netflix. It's a Ricky Gervais kind of show.
Because nobody's heard of it.
No.
Sell it to us.
No, Ricky, it's kind of a hard sell because it's been one of very few shows that I've teared up during.
Wow.
And it didn't seem like that kind of a show, but it's a strange sell. He's like, he has Down syndrome kind of, but not.
Why that wasn't like, funny, but.
It's kind of like Napoleon Dynamite, but not really. But it's kind of really sad and dramatic. You just have to watch the show. It's really bizarre. I haven't seen a lot of shows.
So it's like Flowers for Algernon if it took place in Idaho? I'm sorry. What?
Yes. No. It's set in a British retirement home. And so it's kind of like The Office a little bit, too, because they have these cut-asides.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You just have to watch the show. It's very bizarre, but very good. And I think a lot of people should watch it. It actually does, I think... Probably the easiest thing is like, oh, if you like Louis, you should maybe check out Derek as well.
All right. Well, let's go ahead now and get on to the main course here. last night was kind of a historic moment for a lot of reasons. The season finale of True Detective, starring and produced by Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey, the award-winning Matthew McConaughey, broke HBO Go last night.
Yep.
Because so many people, half of which probably are not subscribers, tried to watch all at the same time as it was live premiering. But we all eventually got to watch it, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's been an interesting journey. I mean, it feels like this show has been with me for a long time, even though I just started watching it Friday.
That's interesting.
It's such a, like, the show, like, you know, it spans a long period of time over, like, a 25-year period. And it
lingers on.
Yeah, and every episode almost feels like a feature-length film in and of itself, even though it's an hour long. They use every single minute of that hour, and they stuff a lot of stuff in there.
And they feel like it feels like chapters. It works.
It feels
like,
very much like a book.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, is it feels like you can very much get that kind of experience out of it, whereas you still don't even get that out of TV.
One of the reasons why I think it feels so much like, you know, like chapters, like a book, is the way the show plays with tension.
Mm-hmm.
They do it in a way that I've never really seen a show be able to capture. You know, it starts us in the present, and then it flashes back to the past. So it doesn't make sense, you know, why if a character is in the past. And they're in peril. Why would we feel tension? They make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one thing that I wanted to talk about that I personally think is part of it, something that I've always had a hard time with TV, is the fact that it's not consistent. You'll get good directors, you'll get bad directors. Or you'll get okay directors or mediocre. In this, you had one single director. And the consistency, and I think it really showed through with the consistency of this show. And I think it made it better.
I am a little sad because the second season is going to have multiple directors so that they can...
Get them done.
Get it to go faster. Which I do think I am a little afraid of it, you know, losing that consistent voice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there is something about this show that is very patient. You know, it's never rushing to get to the, oh my God moments. They come. And they usually when you don't expect it. But it is everything about the show, you know, it's extremely grounded in character. And I think the fact that it's, you know, the non-linear storytelling, the very, almost Fincher-esque, visual design of the show.
Agreed.
And, the acting, which is just top notch. I mean, you know, this is some of the best stuff I've seen from either of these guys.
Well, there's a reason they've been saying it's the McConaughey.
Yeah. Well, and this is, I would say, a good capper of that. And, but all of that stuff, I think, is really, took what would essentially be airport novel pulp and turned and elevated it to, I would almost say, if, you know, if we're talking about these different epochs in this golden age and, you know, starting with Lost and then, you know, going up to Mad Men and da da da, that this is kind of another one.
Sure.
I feel like this is a new plateau. Great.
Well, I think they're also, now that they're doing, you know, they're talking about doing more anthology, it makes sense to me. It really does. And this is another one of those experiments written by the same guy completely, and then also then directed by the same person. To me, this, all of those things to me, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Another, this is a random thing that I liked about it, but I oftentimes do not like a TV show's jingle. It's a little song at the start.
Yeah.
This one never annoyed me. It always felt
I never fast forwarded it. It was always it's a great mood setter.
Plus, like, the visualization during the credits. And I mean, they kind of... There is a precedent for Southern Gothic on TV, like, with True Blood has a similar kind of thing, and with Justified... Mm-hmm.
And if you go back further to Carnival, even further, I think this is another very Child of Twin Peaks kind of show.
Mm-hmm. But I agree that the opening credits set the tone for what you're about to watch, which is...
I think I was trying to describe this to a friend over here. It's like, are you watching True Detective? Because she watches Girls, and we're the only ones who watch it, so we talk about it every week. And I was like, are you watching True Detective? And she's like, no. And I'm like, oh my God. It's like if Cormac McCarthy wrote Twin Peaks and it was directed by David Fincher.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful description, actually.
Apt description, yeah.
How did you guys all feel about the close, the ending, the final episode? Was it satisfying?
Okay. But before we go into this, how spoilery are we going to get? I mean, should we wave a red flag?
Well, we don't want to give away who the, you know, who the bad guy is, or like all the major reveals, but just a general sense.
How I feel about the show is kind of tied to something.
Well, I think that, okay. We're just going to say spoiler alert, because I do think
spoilers.
Because if we're going to talk about the ending, it is very tied into the show. I agree with you.
Okay.
Turn off the podcast now. Go watch True Detective, all of it, if you can do that without going insane.
Yeah.
And come back, finish the podcast.
Yes.
Okay, so for me, this is one of those shows where you're like, okay, this could very well be a show that has a Chinatown ending. It could be horrid. You could end in massive death and horribleness and just ugliness.
I was expecting that. I felt like
talking about the ending, I thought that the last episode was fucking phenomenal until the last like 5-10 minutes. And this is the only thing I can complain about in the whole show. I think it should have ended with Matthew McConaughey looking out the window. Anything after that, I do not think... I thought it was okay, but I don't think it belonged.
I kind of agree.
I had the same sort of gut reaction at first as well. And then I sort of thought on it. I let it stew a little more. And I think that ending was important, and here is why. I think this show, it is a character study. It is about, you know, Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey's character.
Yeah.
And I think that, Cole either needed to die, or he needed that kind of cathartic moment where he had something to believe in his life. I think just letting him stew, is in a lot of ways a disservice to the character and a disservice to the story. I mean,
see,
there is this whole
mystery. I thought it
mystery.
Would have tied into the whole... Because for me, one of the big themes of it was about the whole repeating violence of his life and the whole repeating violence of the situation. And so for me, that's why it needed to end on that note, him looking out the window, is because that's what it should have been, especially with the that to me was a very happy kind of strange ending. And I don't think that it paid service to the overall quality of the show.
Well,
it maybe, was a strangely
maybe
happy
to,
ending, which
maybe to that episode, but
it was a strangely happy ending, which makes me pay attention. That ending, it tonally was very different than the rest of the show. And I think it's because it was important. I think that...
I'll step in. I think that my issue with that ending, and we're talking about the soliloquy that Matthew McConaughey goes into after they've just survived this horrible thing. We're on the bottom. It's basically the epilogue of the show. And they have this conversation about things. And up to this point, Matthew McConaughey has been this diehard nihilist and militant atheist, and he has this very kind of dark outlook on the world. And if you look at it as the character arc is him finding himself and him getting on the other side of that, then it is satisfying for that. If you look at it as a whole of the show, I think it's a little unsatisfying and it feels a little preachy. It almost feels like, to me, the whole thesis of the show was there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole. And I was vaguely offended.
I wasn't vaguely offended.
I just didn't, it didn't, it wasn't satisfying.
At first,
it didn't seem like a natural response from that character.
I do agree with that as well.
That's why I liked it.
I don't think it was trying to offend.
I do agree that it didn't feel like a natural thing for that character, and that is exactly why I liked it. Because over the course of the show, despite him being very blatant, in his personal beliefs to the point of being an asshole, it gave me, with a little feeling of hope, and that might sound cheesy, I liked it. I after such a grim journey,
yeah.
Again, and maybe it was my headspace, going into the show. Like I said, I was watching that in House of Cards at the same time, and just sort of losing my faith in humanity.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I liked that, even though a huge part of the show was this balance of light and dark, and to give that character a little bit of light, I think was ultimately in service to the show.
And I don't think it was a battle of light and dark. I think it was to me, it was kind of a meditation on what humanity is. But it was all almost dark.
And futility, yeah. I mean, I saw the show as a very kind of... I mean, it is, it should be mentioned that me and Richard like the ending of 7, and you hate it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the dividing
line. I don't know,
maybe...
yeah, I don't know. It is a cynical world, and I'm sort of surprised how big of a hit this show was for how cynical and straight up fucking nihilistic
and
it
dark
is.
And really gruesome. I mean, this is a more of a gothic noir than straight almost horror film. I mean, there are parts that I was literally like, ooh, like kind of creeped out.
Well, you needed to,
yeah. There
in,
was
in some way
one episode,
in the way that you synopsis the show, you needed to throw in that there's almost some of Silence of the Lambs in there as well.
Yeah,
also a little
Texas Chainsaw, especially the last episode.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, way. I uh, I will say that there's a few things.
Not just the last episode. There was, like, you know, the stuff with Ledoux was
pretty... It got pretty gruesome throughout. But I will say that there's a few other things that kind of bother me in general. I would say that from the point to where the present time catches up with the past, and then you have the final, like, three episodes, I feel like that is maybe just a hair step below. Like, it gets into, okay, we gotta wrap up the plot stuff, and it feels like character kind of takes a back seat. But we'd had a lot of build up to that point, so it needed to pay off. But I felt like it was sort of on autopilot from that point on.
I was fine with, Russ. I was fine with him growing as a character and becoming less as nihilistic as he was in the first few episodes.
Yeah.
And to me, that seemed very natural because, I mean, he would start to talk to, oh my gosh, I'm losing their names right now. There's Russ and Cole. So he would talk to, like, Cole
they're
in a person.
They're the same person.
Oh, yeah. Well, who am I? Who's Woody Heller's?
Woody Harrelson.
Woody.
Just Woody.
His name's Woody in the show?
No.
I don't know.
Okay.
I can't.
I almost never remember. I don't do names. Like, I just know.
I'm pretty bad with them, too. Rust Cole Marty. Was just so. Marty. Yeah, okay. Marty.
So
Marty Hart.
They started to have a different kind of relationship because time passed.
Yeah.
And you almost get the sense that if these characters, if they could have put behind all their, like, in the moment bullshit, these flaws, like him always having to sleep with other people and being kind of a woman controlling, you know.
Yeah, womanizer.
But the thing is they didn't overdo it. They showed exactly just how their character flaws, just how they are. They didn't make them villains. And then Russ just being so nihilistic that he doesn't even have a family and he's just so obsessive.
Mm-hmm.
They show him as they get older and have actually kind of come around. And so those last few episodes, that's what that was to me, was they didn't have to be at the edge and they didn't have to be, I saw a progression. So to me, I actually liked the last few episodes. To me, the only thing that didn't mesh or didn't make sense or didn't have a reason for being there was
the final soliloquy
was the final little bit. And it was, and for me, it was a misstep, not a, this ruined the series.
No. Yeah. I mean, the show overall, I think, is phenomenal.
I'm
just going to have to agree to disagree with you guys. Like I said, I know where you're coming from, because I felt it, too. I felt it while I was watching the episode. But I came around to where I think the show actually needed that. I do think that in the last couple episodes, I felt the mystery wasn't as mysterious as, you know, we were mysteriously led to believe of mysteries.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of disappointing to me, like, that there wasn't a bit more of a denouement with this whole conspiracy.
Yeah. I mean, it pretty much, you feel like there's almost something dark or mystical going on, and it kind of just becomes serial killer thriller.
Well, see, I see what you guys are saying, but to me, I knew from, I think it was episode 2, when the Tuttle guy come in, I was like, that's the guy. I don't know why, but in my mind, I knew something was going on, just the way that they were talking, and the reason that they were having the flashbacks.
I really liked the conspiracy element.
But to me, that's how it was. I like the fact that it ended there. Because again, for me, that's why it should have ended where it did, is because this circle of nepotism and kind of weird, to me, that's why it's relevant, is because you're talking about society being fucked up because of these elements. And the fact that these, you know, this backwater woodsy incest babies are the same as our governors, that tie, that's important to me.
I agree. I guess I just wanted to see that, I don't know, maybe explore it a little more or something.
The last episode, the build up to him, because I mean they basically reveal the guy the very, you know,
the very end of the second to last episode.
And for him to be as fucking creepy as shit as he was in that 8th episode, and for you to be scared as hell, even though these two characters, you're kind of like waiting for something grim to happen, I think that that's very impressionable to me. I was along for the whole ride, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the killer himself, I actually liked how you know he was in Russ's head for so long, and he had fucked with him to the point of being a supernatural entity, just like he had become to his victims. You know, like the Yellow King. He had become more than just a man, but in the end, he was just a fucking crazy redneck killer. Like, I really liked that contrast of, you know, mythology versus humanity.
Yeah, and there's a whole big thing, and again, another reason why I felt that soliloquy was disingenuous. There's a whole big thing going on here about religion and how this area is kind of, religion is used as a blanket to hide things or to divert things. And it seemed like Rust's perspective, he was able to cut through all of that because he was the only one thinking the way he did. And so the fact that they ended it on...
I guess I disagree with you on that. I think if they were upfront about him being so nihilistically atheist,
no, to a point that he's antisocial. Yeah.
Well, to the point where he's not functional.
Yeah.
People think he's crazy and insane. But on the flip side, you have this character that everybody accepts as so normal and so just unabashedly, but he's to the point where he's stupidly religious. Where he believes, but like it's just kind of there because of societal norms.
Yeah.
Not because he actually fucking has given an iota of thought to it.
No, yeah.
And I think, Cassidy, the position you're taking gives Russ as the sort of the moral authority, gives him the position of being right. And I think what's important about the show is both of these characters are sort of broken.
No, yeah, they are, in a way, they balance each other out.
Yeah, and so I kind of agree with what Richard said. Like, Marty blindly believes it. He just believes it because that's what you do. And Russ questions it because there's nothing, you know, worth feeling about it to him. And I think, you know, the solution is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
It's where those characters meet, because apart, they are useless. You know, they accomplish nothing. But together, despite their fighting, despite their personal differences, they need those personal differences. They need those fighting to challenge each other, to complete their characters.
Well, also in the creepy moment, this kind of ties in with it, the creepy redneck King Carcosa, bad guy, the whole time that he's leading Russ Cole through this
maze, wicker basically maze. Yeah,
he's referring to him as priest.
Yeah,
and that to me was very as significant as that as well. It's like, oh, this guy is, you know, he preaches it just the same as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And he's preaching nothing.
He's preaching the same, you know. Both of these people are preachers. Mm-hmm. They're just preaching different things. Nobody fucking has a clue. Is what it was part of what it was to me. I don't think,
and it's so telling. I love that scene, like how that scene's handled and how they're separated is so carefully planned out. Again, it has to do with that strength that comes from their partnership and the weakness that comes from them being alone. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, he is preaching this stuff the same as the guy in the revival.
See,
yeah,
I didn't mind the fact.
Well, and if you...
to me, the scenes right after that where Marty talks to his wife and stuff like that, and then he realizes he's lost all of them. Really, that was significant. Needed to be there.
No, yeah, I agree with that.
I didn't mind the part where they came in and they flipped each other off and they talked about it, and they're basically each other's wives. I didn't mind that. It was the right after that that's when, to me, it did feel disingenuous.
Controversial ending.
Yes.
What
are the things about the show? Because, okay, Cassidy, you literally texted me and told me you had to tell me that the show gave you willies.
It did. There was part, like, because I watch it late, you know, and I was watching, like, multiple episodes at a time, like, four or five. So, like, I don't know. It just, like, works on you, and it's so atmospheric. And some of the visuals are so weird and kind of otherworldly, and the music and everything, it just... I don't know, like, I just got, like, sucked into the diegesis of the show to the point where I just, like, kind of got a little creeped out.
I agree. More so than most movies and shows that claim to be horror, there's a particular moment that affected me more than anything else. The setup is Russ this killer? It sort of points the finger at him in a way.
Well, there's a lot of red herrings, but yeah.
Yeah, but it gets pretty explicit with is Russ the Yellow King. I think it's so appropriate that this was the same episode where they reveal who the killer is and nobody had any idea.
Yeah.
The guy in the lawnmower. The part where Russ goes back to that school and he's creeping through it and he sees these wicker effigies, and man, that just fucking bothered me. and it's nothing specifically about that imagery. It's just at that point in the show, I didn't know what the fuck I was watching. Yeah. And it was cool.
I would say for me, it's, that first episode, it's such a great pilot. I'm surprised there's people I've talked to who are like, I wasn't that into it at first, but now I like it. It's like, I don't know how, because that was a fucking great pilot. Agreed. But there's this, there's this image that's repeated twice. It's this victim who's kind of sprawled out with this antler crown. And you see it at the beginning of the show, and for me, this, when you see it again, it's like, oh, this is still happening, or, I think now that I've watched this, I completely understand why they got this guy, Nick Pizzolatto, to readapt it. Structurally, it's very similar.
Yeah.
But that really creeped me out when you see it again in present day.
You know what? Actually, it's funny. There was a kind of a. This was a little bit of a leading question, because for me, you know what freaked me out? There's I don't know if it was episode 3 or 4, but there's a point in time where I'm like, these are the people who are fucking our police. You know?
Yeah.
The name of the show is True Detective, and this is who we're talking about. Is these people? You know, these people who we are giving power. And it's not that I found them completely deplorable or whatever. It's just there was a point in time where I was like, you see that these guys are at times just as bad as the villains, almost. Not as bad as the serial killer villains, but,
criminals.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a part where, Marty beats those teenage boys, like,
yeah,
that was, well, hard. And
Russ was beating random garage people and all that. Yeah.
Oh my god, that long following the tracking shot in episode 4, that is like masterclass cinema right there.
Yeah, that I wanted to touch on that
where he used those people
as human shield, but it doesn't cut for something like 17 minutes.
Yeah.
That was the moment when I knew this would be one of my favorites.
Yeah, that was the moment where I was like, we're in new territory now. This isn't just like the next Mad Men or the next Game of Thrones. This is like, this is a new plateau.
This is True
Detective. Yeah, like the first episodes, I'm like, oh, this is a good procedural show. But yeah, that moment, that fucking scene, I was like, Jesus, I've never seen anything like that on TV.
Yeah, and pulled off really well. I can't imagine the choreography that went into that.
No, all right. It was agreed.
Well, we got to wrap up because we're almost on the 2-hour mark in our jumbo-sized TV episode. It's been fun to do.
It has been. We might have to do this in a part 1 and part 2.
Yeah, I might cut it up. We'll see what happens. Keith, thank you for coming on and wrapping TV with us.
I think it's important, that we know that television has come full circle once we get another show that's almost as good as Family Matters.
How did I know?
Damn you and Family Matters.
How did I know? you're sticking with that joke. You're never confident with it, but you're going to stick with it the whole way through.
And the thing is, I peppered it in there so that just carefully enough so that you can't edit it.
Sure.
If people enjoyed having me guest host, they are welcome to follow me on Twitter at Keith Foster Kid.
All right. Anywhere else I can follow
that's
you?
That's all I got to plug. And the Comedy Project every Friday is if anyone in Pocatello listens to this.
Pocatello, Idaho. If you're for whatever reason in the Southeast Idaho region, you can check out the Comedy Project every Friday at 8 p.m., where Keith does his little improv.
My Borats. Yes. My Borats and Family Matters.
We got the nuggets. Okay, if you want to follow us, or if you have anything to say about anything we talked about today, what was your feelings on True Detective? What are your favorite TV shows? What did we egregiously leave out? You can email us at jabberonthedrone@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook and see whenever we post new episodes or have any updates about the show at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or Pocket Cast and listen to us on your favorite mobile device. You can find our RSS feed and our archives at jabberthedrone.podbean.com. You can read my movie reviews that I do weekly for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can read the other reviews I've been writing. I did one review for South by Southwest here just posted today at MacGuffin, the Seattle-based website, MacGuffin.in/author/Cassidy. You can check out Richard's blog that he just started on the internets at rdwally.weebly.com. And we'll talk to you next week. I think we're going to try and see Grand Budapest Motel, hopefully.
Well, we'll be seeing Veronica Mars.
And you'll be watching that.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to you next week. Bye, Keith.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.